Hey, this is Joe and Lisa Duty back in the studio today. Hey, Lisa, how's it going?
Oh, it's going really good.
All right.
Having a good day.
Hey, we've got a real treat for the listeners today. We've got Bob Crist, photographer, filmmaker, and author, whose clients were such as National Geographic and National Geographic Traveler, Smithsonian, and the Islands. And Bob, you've had a pretty illustrious career throughout your life.
I've been lucky. Yeah. I hit the magazine industry when it was still in full bloom. And so I was fortunate enough to ride it out. And I've also seen it kind of collapse a little, but yeah, all in all, not a bad 40 some odd year career.
Well, that's amazing. Yes, sir. And I find it, you continue to, as I understand, you continue to grow and with the new age and all. How is that working for you nowadays? What are some of the changes over the years?
Well, you know, I went all digital in 2003, and one of the things that digital photography brought on was that the process was no longer magic. So many people could do it. So many people had access to it. So many people were traveling. At the same time, the magazine industry was kind of collapsing. So a lot of photographers, rather than shooting assignments, which weren't coming, were taking people all around the world to their favorite travel locations, showing them how to shoot and everything. And these people, you know, had a lot of money, a lot of time, great equipment. They loved to learn. And so all of a sudden, you know, it kind of crystallized when another instructor and I, Tony Sweet, were speakers at a consortium of Virginia camera clubs. And they said before we went on, they said, can you walk through our print exhibit? And, you know, one of the things way back when that you could count on if you went to a camera club print exhibit was that you'd see a lot of technically expert but really dull prints of dull subjects and everything. Well, Tony and I walked through there and our jaws were on the floor. There was great wildlife. There was great landscapes. There was superb printing quality, you know, manipulation of the files, so dramatic. And as we walked out of there, Tony looked at me and he said, you know, there's nothing we can teach these people anymore. And I said, yeah. And it forced me to kind of take a long, hard look at what my strengths and weaknesses were. And I was never good at Photoshop or anything. But the two things I determined that I could do better than any, you know, amateur, more, you know, was to photograph people and tell stories. I had worked in the magazine business all my life, so I never shot for individual stories. I was always individual pictures. I was always shooting for stories. So I looked at that and I said, okay, am I going to be a people photographer? How does storytelling work in if there's no magazines to run stories? And then they put digital capabilities, video capabilities in a still camera. And that's when things started to kind of crystallize for me. And I said, well, look, here's, you know, photographing people and telling stories. What's a better medium than video? So I undertook the second big learning curve of my late career. And I taught myself through and signed up for a lot of courses and stuff in shooting motion, shooting stories. And that has been in the last 10 years of my career, you know, and I'm semi-retired now, but I'm still working. I still will do the occasional assignment for a longtime client or a new client if it's interesting. But video, short videos have become my thing, and it's absolutely galvanized me, and I love it. I really love it.
Oh, that's cool.
Keeps it exciting to change and grow with the times, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And, you know, you do something as long as I'd done the stills, and it started to lose it, you know, for those reasons that it wasn't magic anymore. But there's still very few people who can do the video storytelling. So many of my clients, not my clients, my colleagues, my older colleagues are like, I don't want to bother learning video, you know. And I'm like, dudes, you know, this is where the work is coming from. And, you know, it has the, you have the power over the story that way. You know, in the old days, I used to maybe get a manuscript or maybe not, and I'd be sent to a place to shoot pictures, and I'd have to, with National Geographic, you'd have to hand in every frame that you shot, and then somebody else would pick the pictures, and somebody else would do the layout, and somebody else would decide what the story was. But as a filmmaker, you do all of that. And that kind of power and that kind of control for an older guy, an older person who's been in the business for a while, is intoxicating. Now, it also comes with great responsibility, because you have to tell good stories and you have to do it all well. But it's working out pretty well for me. I really enjoy it.
Well, I'm so glad to see you embrace the times and everything, and with your abilities and past as far as being a writer and, you know, contributor to major magazines, it just seems like a natural fit for you.
It is. It's very natural. And what I try to point out to my younger colleagues is that, you know, to survive this business now, you're going to need multiple streams of income and multiple skills.
Amen.
So there is really more video work coming down the pike than still work. Almost anybody who does both says that. And so even, you know, all right, you're talking to a guy now who's semi-retired and stuff. So, you know, if you're a 30-something-year-old photographer trying to make it now, what good is that advice from an older guy? But multiple streams of income, you know, adding this arrow to your quiver is going to be really necessary, I think. Nobody can think of themselves anymore as just a photographer or just a videographer or just a blogger. You've got to be a little of everything, I think, to get by.
Okay. Well, you know, we kind of like to share some of the things, you know. I mean, there's multiple podcasts on equipment and, you know, all that sort of thing. But we try to, you know, dig into photographer and see what makes them actually be so good at what they do. And I remember taking your workshop in 2010 in Maine. It was, you know, when I started out, there was three people I wanted to take from, and you were one of them. And I so enjoyed the class. The thing I remember about it is you being so personable with people everywhere we went, and, you know, just able to, it seemed like they would just tell you anything. You can get a story out of any, how do you feel that helped you, you know, in this endeavor?
Well, I think that, you know, my experience working all over the world, and including places where you can't speak the language, has given me an ability to kind of put people at ease. And I'm, you know, I do enjoy meeting people and talking to people. When it's part of the assignment, left to my own devices, I'm kind of shy. My wife is really outgoing. You know, like at a cocktail party, I just want to kind of stand in the corner. But if you give me a camera and tell me, you know, document the town of Booth Bay Harbor, I'm out there and I'm talking to the lobstermen and I'm talking to the boat repair guys and stuff like that. But if you put me in a cocktail party, I'm the guy in the corner just stuffing my face and drinking, you know, because I'm kind of shy in that respect. But I think the key to handling and approaching people is to show them respect, show interest in their lives, and to somehow give them a feeling of trust in you. And that's kind of hard, because there's a lot of mistrust of the press these days, and people don't like, you know, it's not like it was. It's getting scary out there for people who are working on the street with cameras and everything. I think in my case, you know, looking like Santa Claus doesn't hurt. I play that that Santa Claus card all the time. At first, it kind of freaked me out. I said, really, Santa Claus? You know, I'd be down and all these little kids would run up and say, Santa Claus, Santa Claus. And I'm like, no, I'm not that old and that fat. And then I looked at the mirror, I said, oh, yeah, you are. So you're done with it, you know. So now, you know, I'll pull out that card if I have to and stuff. And, you know, I'm pretty much of a harmless. I have a, you know, I'm a big guy, but I'm not a threatening presence. And I think that helps. But certainly I do find, especially in other parts of the world, the gray, being an elder, people will talk to you. They'll respect you a little more. Not so much in this country, but certainly in Latin America, where I spend – you know, I've been spending, Peggy and I live part-time in Mexico. We have for the last 5 years, we about 5 years ago, to escape the winters. As we got older, we just couldn't take the winters. We went down and got a little place in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico. So I do a lot of work down in Mexico. And certainly in that culture, an elder is respected, you know, and stuff. So that's one of the good things about getting old. There aren't too many, but one of them is people are more willing to talk to you. I think you appear more harmless or something. I don't know why for sure.
Okay. Well, I can see that. I've never really thought about that before, but I can see how that'd be a good card to play when necessary, you know?
And, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, if it makes that connection, you know? And well, let's step back a few years, Bob. Let's say you're a young photographer and you want to get started in the business. And obviously it was a different time back then when you started and all that. But, you know, I know from the field you've got to have a lot of stories and a lot of different things. And some of those probably weren't so easy. And what is it? What's the passion? What does it take to keep doing that?
Well, I think, you know, certainly as a young photographer starting out, you don't have the money to travel around the world and everything. And I think the thing is to, you know, maybe think globally, but act locally. Start by shooting what's familiar to you, what's close to you, trying to do stories about your area, your part of the country, things that are easy for you to get to and everything. And then you build a body of work of this work. And then hopefully people who have the ability to send you a little further afield start to see it. I mean, certainly, you know, one of the hardest things that I have, the question that I have to ask now is, how do you break into the business now? I really don't know, because the landscape has changed so much. But I do know that even back when I was breaking out of, when I was leaving the newspaper and trying to do national magazine work, I started by shooting stories close to me. In fact, my first National Geographic story was a story about my home state of New Jersey. Nobody else wanted to shoot New Jersey. Geographic was doing, they used to do those state profile stories, and I pitched it and they gave it to me because, you know, I had the local knowledge and I was the only one crazy enough to think that you could get a Geographic story out of New Jersey, which we did. But but certainly I think that really applies today with YouTube channels and stuff. I'll give you an example. When I was, you know, of how that still works today. When I was teaching myself video and taking these workshops, I decided that I want, you know, nobody was going to assign me to do these things. So I would pick some interesting people in my neck of the woods and do little video profiles of them. So I found this guy who was the manager of a local tourist steam railroad, and I did a thing on him. And then we had a lady across the river in the small town who did these fabulous, wild, crazy Halloween displays that, you know, were so fantastic. And I did something on her, and I would just put them up on my Vimeo channel. And after I did about the third or fourth one, I got a call from Pennsylvania Tourism Department saying, you know, we love these character sketches that you're doing. Can you do some for us? Mm-hmm. And that ended up being one of the biggest jobs I ever had, because they wanted what they saw me doing for myself. They wanted it done for them. So I think whereas a photographer today doesn't have the magazine outlets, as many magazine outlets and stuff for their work, you do have a way of getting your work out to millions of people with the internet and YouTube and Vimeo and stuff like that. So I would advise, you know, anybody, whether they're doing stills or video or whatever, shoot what you love and get it out there. Get it out there so people can see it. And you just never know when some brand or somebody's like, it's like, you know what? I've been looking for that kind of approach to my product or my service. You'd be the guy or the gal to do it. So that's my best advice. And it worked 40 some odd years ago, and it worked 10 years ago when I was, you know, getting in the video. So shoot what you love and get it out there, publicize it. and do everything you can, you know, to have exhibits, you know, in local coffee shops, do slideshows at the local, I mean, after all this COVID is over, you don't want to go into a senior citizen housing now, but before this, you know, the population of America is aging, and the senior citizens complexes are always looking for speakers to give shows, especially if it's exotic travel. And a lot of them will pay honorariums. You know, who knows what's going to happen after COVID, but there are ways to get your work out there. And the more ways you get your work out there, the more people see it, the better chance you have of finding work. I think that's the key.
Wow.
So, Bob, I have to ask you a question, because I can't have somebody who's done as many things for as many companies and magazines as you have without thinking about, well, the name of our podcast is Pain and Joy. It's stories from the field of photojournalism. And I bet that you have some of the most amazing stories. Is there a story that comes to mind when you were on location and on assignment somewhere that just goes, man, that story, you know, some moment that happened with the people you were shooting or just that environment? Can you kind of relay to us one of your favorite stories from your 40 years?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of they're mishaps when they're happening, and then they become pretty good dinner table stories afterwards. Mm-hmm. But one of the strangest things I ever had happen to me resulted in some pretty unusual pictures, very few of which have been published because they're kind of unusual. But I was working on a story on Trinidad for Islands Magazine. And I was working with this writer who was kind of like this kind of hippy dippy new age gal from the Pacific Northwest. And she kept putting out, you know, to our fixer and she said, I want to see Shango. I want to see Shango is Trinidadian voodoo.
Oh.
And I had seen and photographed some voodoo in Haiti, and I wasn't that interested. You know, I said, come on. Her name was Jessica. I said, Jessica, this is serious stuff. Maybe, you know, you best leave this alone. Well, she was on it and on it and on it. And then she had like an attack of the vapors, and she left in the middle of the assignment, but not before the word had gone out. And I get a knock on my hotel door one night at about 11. And there's two big guys there saying, you're the man that wants to see the Shango. And I said,
oh, no.
Come with us, come with us. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe not, you know. But my curiosity, I said, well, all right. So I grabbed my camera, and they took me into the hills above Port of Spain, the capital city. And we went into this real slum area, and we were going deeper and deeper. And then I said, oh my God, you know, what have I got myself into?
This is the wrong.
And there was some drumming and everything. And we come to this open-sided garage. It's called a peristyle. And there was a drummer and there was a priest. And they had told me, if we're going to go, we have to buy the priest some oranges and a bottle of brandy, which we stopped and we bought, and I gave it to the priest. And things were going along. There was some drumming and some chanting, and it seemed pretty pretty tame. And I was like, okay, there's no light. This was in the film era. There was one single light bulb. So, you know, I had my stuff pushed to like 800, and you know, and I was trying to grab some shots. And then all of a sudden, things got cranked up, and a woman fell on the ground and started speaking in tongues. And then she came up, and somebody gave her a machete, and she was swinging the machete around, and these voices coming out of her. And I'm like, okay, this is now serious. and now this is back in the 80s. So this is back before, you know, going after journalists was a international sport. But all of a sudden she's swinging around, the drums are going. She points at me, and these guys drag me into the center of the ring. They push me down on my knees, and now I'm in fight or flee mode.
Oh my!
And I
God.
Keep thinking, they're not going to kill a travel journalist. They're just not going to do this. But I couldn't get out of it. And she's swinging the thing around, and I noticed that, you know, everybody she looked at, they would look away in fear. So I decided I wouldn't lose sight of her eyes. So I kind of locked eyes with her, and she raises the machete over her head, And then she does one of these knighting things where she touches each of my shoulder.
Oh,
they drag me back. The drums go. There's more fortune telling. This stuff, it goes on all night. And finally, you know, the sun comes up. The roosters start crowing. I've only shot maybe about 20 frames because I couldn't use a flash and there wasn't that much lights, but I did get some pictures. And then everybody, the kind of the spell is lifted and everybody, the little old lady is now a little old lady again and stuff. And there was one guy who I kind of locked onto as being, he seemed like he was fairly friendly. And I said, what happened? What happened last night? And he said, you were accepted by the god Shango. And I said, Oh, that's great. I said, what would have rejection entailed? He said, you don't want to know, man. You don't want to know. You know?
Oh, my gosh.
So I get back. I've got these, like, 20 pictures, very grainy, of dancers and blades and stuff. And I send them in with the rest of the take to the magazine. They said, nah, this is too dark and scary. We're not going to publish these. I said, you know, I almost got my head cut off for these pictures. And to this day, nobody's really published them. I've got them, but in film. I don't even have them scanned. But it was so that was one of the more, probably one of the more galvanizing evenings I've had doing my work.
I would say that makes for a really good story. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. I bet you were
the pictures match the story.
Right. Yeah. The emulsion sheet of the mind, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's indelibly engraved up there.
Oh, that's cool.
That would be hard to forget.
Yeah. So I'm sure you have a ton of those. And, being that personality, maybe you should write a book. Oh, wait. You have wrote a book. Several.
I have written a couple of books. They're not memo. They're not like biographies. They're how-to books. So I don't get to tell too many of those stories. But my wife and kids are on me about writing some kind of a memoir of some of these kind of things. And I may do that. I just published a book of some of my favorite portraits and places in black and white. And maybe I can get my wife to hand me a copy of the old. It's called Old Souls and Timeless Places.
Ah.
And I'll show you a copy of it here. And so I published it, self-published it, and anyway, it's all black and white, and it's beautifully printed black and white, quad tone black and white of people and places that really have made an indelible mark on me. And it's done in black and white. And there's some short versions of the stories in the captions. And we've been selling this ourselves, and we donate the proceeds to a little foundation that we have in memory of my youngest son, who passed away about 14 years ago. And he was a real charitable soul. So we do scholarships for underprivileged kids and stuff. So I decided, if I self-publish, I'm going to lose my shirt anyway. So I might as well lose my shirt in a good cause. So we're selling this through the website for our foundation, the Jonathan Criss Foundation. Unfortunately, during COVID, we can't get to the warehouse to get any more of the books because the warehouse is in Pennsylvania and we're in Maine. So we're not publicizing it again. We did a big push right before we left for Mexico in December. And we only printed about 750, and we sold about half of them, which was a good chunk of money for the foundation. And I was going to resume my push on social media when we got home from Mexico, but now we're home here, but we can't get the books up from Pennsylvania, so I'm holding off. But this is my latest labor of love in the still world.
But I've read most of your stuff. I think probably my favorite is Spirit of Place.
Yeah, that one I think is really still, I mean, it was written in the film era. So a lot of the how-to advice about the technical things is dated, but the procedural advice about traveling and encountering and light and everything, that stuff never changes. So that is definitely, my I've done two how-to books about travel. The second one was written right after my son passed away, and it's not a bad book. It's still better than a lot of the how-to stuff out there, but I was a little distracted and upset. The Spirit of Place is the one where I was kind of focused.
Yeah, I love that. Yes, sir. And yeah, so, you know, we don't really talk too much about equipment and stuff like that nowadays, but, you know, I remember when I was trying to learn Flash, looking at your videos back to the Nikon stuff, you know, and trying to put all that together way back when. You know, you've been part of two major companies that, I say major company, I don't know if that's the right word or not, Nikon and now Sony, your, what is it, Artisans?
Artisan of Imagery, it's like their ambassador program. It's like the Nikon ambassadors. Yeah, my switch to video also switched me from using DSLR equipment to mirrorless equipment. Mm-hmm. Because the first couple of assignments I got were things that required me to shoot stills and video for a client. And if you work with a DSLR, you know that in order to go from stills to video, you got to lock up the mirror. You got to put a loop on the back of the LCD screen. And it's kind of a lumpy, dumpy process, you know, and I needed to be able to do it instantly. So at first I picked up just a small mirrorless body and adapted my Nikon lenses to it. And then I kind of fell in love with the little electronic viewfinder and how small the stuff was. And over the course of about 2 years, I switched systems. There was nothing wrong with the Nikon stuff. Nikon stuff is fabulous equipment, but they didn't have at that point a mirrorless camera.
Right.
And that's what I needed. So I held on as long as I could, but I had to make the switch, and it was and Sony was the one that I had chosen, and then they took me into their stable. It was a tough decision, and of course now Nikon and Canon have mirrorless cameras,
right.
So they kind of woke up a little, you know, but it was too late for me. I needed to move on a little earlier, and so I've switched to Sony, and I haven't looked back. I've been very happy with it. The gear is smaller, it's lighter, and I like to say that the older and heavier I get, the newer and lighter I like my gear to be. So I do like the smaller gear, and shooting mirrorless is for any hybrid person shooting stills and video, it's so much easier, you know.
Well, I have heard a lot of good stuff about that. I've seen a few of them, and I'm a basic amateur when it comes to motion, nothing like what you do here, but Nikon's still working for me so far.
Oh yeah, no, they're great. It's great stuff. Look, everybody's putting out wonderful equipment these days. There's nothing in our equipment that's holding us back anymore. I mean, we can shoot in the dark, for God's sakes, with these high ISOs. Man, if I had a current camera during that Shango thing, I'd have thousands of pictures, and they wouldn't be publishable, and there wouldn't be a bit of noise in them. But you know, when you're talking pushing Kodachrome 200, two stops to 800, the grain was as big as baseballs. It was sharp,
right.
But you know, when Kodachrome 200 is your high speed film, you know that's not such high speed. So it's so funny because you know, I look back at a lot of the. Of my old film assignments and think, oh my God, if I could shoot in the low light the way I can shoot now, the things I could have photographed. But, you know, it's better late than never, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, you've had a 40-year very successful career, Bob, in everything from teaching workshops to, you know, all these assignments and for major players and everything. What is next for Bob Chris?
Well, you know, it's hard to know in the current environment what COVID is going to leave us when it hopefully eventually fades away. I think it's going to change the travel business. I don't think that people are going to be traveling as freely and as far as they once did. Now, this could be a blessing and a curse. It could mean that that the market for finding out about exotic locations overseas by way of your computer screen rather than getting on a plane, it could call for an increase in that kind of material. People might want to consume more and more of that, or it could mean that people are not that interested because they can't go themselves. I'm not really sure. For me, I think, you know, I'm going to go back to, you know, doing my local stuff. I still have one or two travel clients that they say when things lift, they're going to go back out on the road and they need the video and all that kind of stuff. But Maine is a relatively new location for me. And, you know, I taught up there every summer, but I never got a chance to go out and travel about. I was always in the classroom with you guys doing reviews and stuff like that, right?
Right.
So my wife and my kids got a chance to travel about. So we moved up here about a year and a half ago. And last summer, I just had a blast traveling within a 30 or 40 mile radius, you know, here. And so there's a lot of stories up around here that I want to do. And so I think at least in the beginning, when things open up and it's safe to go out again, I think I'll be working on some local stories again. And then we'll just see what happens with the long-term foreign travel. We'll just, you know, nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds like a great plan, Bob. Sounds like a good plan. And I just want to say thank you for being on and sharing some of your stuff with our listeners. And so they can see your work at
BobKrist.com. Yeah, BobKrist.com. And there I have some photography. I'm just updating the site. Like everybody got a lot of time on my hands. So I'm updating the still galleries because I had been neglecting the still galleries, but my motion stuff is up there. And so there's a fair amount of material up there. And some of the still stuff is new because I've been negligent with updating it because I've been concentrating on the video. But now some of my new still work is up there. So that's the best place to see it.
All right.
And so then also with regards to the new book that we were talking about, that's, you know, you're hesitating to put it out there yet, but in the future, when you are able to get those books again, do we find those at BobKrist.com too?
Yes. You can click through there. And basically what we do is we direct you to the site for my son's foundation. You make a charitable donation through the Network for Good. And then we send you the book. So it's all explained there and on the website.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Bob, for being here. Appreciate it. I've always admired your work, and I look forward to see what you're doing next.
All right. Thanks, Joe. I really appreciate it. Nice to meet you, Mrs. Duty.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
All right.